Pat Hobby and Orson Welles by F. Scott Fitzgerald. Read by Richard Midgley.
Who's this Welles? Pat asked of Louis, the studio bookie. Every time I pick up a paper, they got about this Welles.
You know, he's that beard, explained Louis.
Sure I know he's that beard. You couldn't miss that. But what credit's he got? What's he done to draw 150 grand a picture?
What indeed? Had he, like Pat, been in Hollywood over 20 years? Did he have credits that would knock your eye out, extending up to, well, up to 5 years ago, when Pat's credits had begun to be few and far between?
Listen, they don't last long, said Louis consolingly. We've seen them come and we've seen them go, eh, Pat?
Yes, but meanwhile, those who had toiled in the vineyard through the heat of the day were lucky to get a few weeks at 350. Men who had once had wives and Filipinos and swimming pools.
Maybe it's the beard, said Louis. Maybe you and I should grow a beard. My father had a beard, but it never got him off Grand Street.
The gift of hope had remained with Pat through his misfortunes, and the valuable alloy of his hope was proximity. Above all things, one must stick around. One must be there when the glazed, tired mind of the producer grappled with the question, who? So presently, Pat wandered out of the drugstore and crossed the street to the lot that was home. As he passed through the side entrance, an unfamiliar studio policeman stood in his way.
Everybody in the front entrance now. I'm Hobby, the writer, Pat said.
The Cossack was unimpressed.
Got your card? I'm between pictures, but I've got an engagement with Jack Berners. Front gate.
As he turned away, Pat thought savagely, lousy Keystone cop. In his mind, he shot it out with him. Plunk, the stomach. Plunk, plunk, plunk. At the main entrance, too, there was a new face.
Where's Ike? Pat demanded.
Ike's gone.
Well, it's all right. I'm Pat Hobby. Ike always passes me.
That's why he's gone, said the Guardian blandly. Who's your business with?
Pat hesitated. He hated to disturb a producer.
Call Jack Berner's office, he said. Just speak to his secretary.
After a minute, the man turned from the phone.
What about? He said. About a picture.
He waited for an answer.
She wants to know what picture.
Ah, to hell with it, said Pat disgustedly.
Look, call Louis Griebel. What's all this about?
Orders from Mr. Casper, said the clerk. Last week, a visitor from Chicago fell in the wind machine. Hello, Mr. Louis Griebel?
I'll talk to him, said Pat, taking the phone.
I can't do nothing, Pat, mourned Louis. I had trouble getting my boy in this morning. Some twerp from Chicago fell in the wind machine.
What's that got to do with me?
Demanded Pat vehemently. He walked a little faster than his wont along the studio wall to the point where it joined the back lot. There was a guard there, but there were always people passing to and fro, and he joined one of the groups. Once inside, he would see Jack and have himself accepted from this absurd ban. Why, he had known this lot when the first shacks were rising on it, when this was considered the edge of the desert.
Sorry, mister, you with this party?
I'm in a hurry, said Pat. Pass my card.
Yeah. Well, for all I know, you may be a plain clothes man.
He held open a copy of a photo magazine under Pat's nose.
I wouldn't let you in even if you told me you was this here Orson Welles.
There is an old Chaplin picture about a crowded streetcar, where the entrance of one man at the rear forces another out in front. A similar image came into Pat's mind in the ensuing days whenever he thought of Orson Welles. Welles was in, Hobby was out. Never before had the studio been barred to Pat. And though Welles was on another lot, it seemed as if his large body, pushing in brashly from nowhere, had edged Pat out the gate.
Now where do you go? Pat thought.
He had worked in the other studios, but they were not his. At this studio, he never felt unemployed. In recent times of stress, he had eaten property food on its stages.